Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
As the veil diminishes, we notice that there is a pregnant silence, a silence that is rich if we only surrender into it. And then we begin to listen, not for thoughts or ideas, but we begin to listen to a language of the soul. And the mind will go, huh? What's that all about? But then when you say, I'm not going to give it to my mind in this moment, but rather I'm going to surrender into a heart space. The Sufis call it the cave of the heart wherein God lies. Again, that's a metaphor. And so one of the most beautiful things I like to do is to reflect on something that captures my heart. This could be a pet. We've been talking about Zane, an incredible Great Dane who came into this center 7 years ago with a physical challenge, but his soul was so radiant that he won the hearts of everyone at the center. And I feel his presence. It was Anthony DeMillo who wrote a little book called Wellsprings and Their Spiritual Practices. And one of his practices is to reflect on a loving presence in your life. I referenced Zane. It could be my old dog, Bert. It could be your ancestors, maybe your parent or a teacher that you are beloved of. And just by calling forth that remembrance of them, what's generated from within is a sense of love, a sense of inner beingness, how they didn't really leave. They're still here. And so we smile to that felt awareness of this loving presence that is true. And then it launches us into a question, well, if I can experience the intimacy with a spiritual being who's no longer on the planet, well then, what does that say about reality? And then we hear this voice from deep within that says, you're a spiritual being and you're having a human experience. And then as we try to make sense out of that without getting it too academic and mental, we begin to realize that there's an invisible part of life that holds the visible. There is an infinite capacity that holds the finite. And it expands us out of concepts, beliefs, thoughts, goals, ambitions, and we are free-floating in a field of possibility, in a field of creative imagination. And then we hear Teilhard de Chardin speak about, someday we will harness the power of love. And we will create such immense good on the planet. And the local mind will go, huh? But the jubilant and beholden soul will go, yes, to harness the power of love on the planet, where every chipmunk and every squirrel is considered holy and not a pest to be eradicated, where every life form is recognized as sacred and necessary. I spoke with beloved Sylvia O'Neill, who's having her valve replacement on Tuesday. She sends you all her love. And she said, I have only one problem. I said, what is that, Sylvia? She says, there's a little green frog that's in my house, and he's on the walls, and I'm afraid he's going to jump into my bed. And I said, you'll be fine, Sylvia. The little green frog isn't going to hurt you. Well, I'm more concerned for him than I. And we smiled as we recognized that here, too, is the face of the beloved coming in a little green frog. I called him a squirrel. He's a frog. I said, we can call him Kermit, and maybe he'll sing to you his song, The Rainbow Connection. And then we both smiled and laughed. And the invitation is to live in the question this Sunday morning. What is the meaning of this whole experience we call life? And as it says in the Talmud, why ruin a perfectly good question with an answer? So today I'm not going to give you answers. In fact, I would suggest that you don't seek answers, but that you live in the question, how then shall we live, knowing that we will die someday? Live in the question, what is it that I truly love? And be willing to feel deeply at the soul level what that brings up for you. Live in the question, what are the gifts that I bring to this incarnation on planet Earth? And listen with your heart. The head will want to give you conclusions and strategies and opinions, but the heart doesn't do that. The heart guides you through a felt sense of belonging. Longing is the ache of the presence within us to know itself, and belonging is being the longing, and then longing for the being. And so in that confused phrase that I just said, we don't have to figure it out with our mind. We can just yield and open to a felt awareness of belonging. There was a question, why is there such resonance in our healing and revealing circle before the center? And that's because we're all one. We inter are, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. There's only one here, as it says in the Science of Mind. There are two kinds of people, humorously someone said, those who believe there are two and those who don't. And so when you realize there aren't two, there's only one life, and that life on beautiful planet Earth emerges from the Divine Mother and has all her children, and they are all our children, and we are all the mother. And so when we begin to see things with fresh eyes, we have the capacity to embrace everything and everyone as our own self. Now, what does that mean, David, you might ask? Well, I'm not going to give you an answer, but I will invite you to discover it for yourself. It's all about remembering and forgetting. So today I invite you to remember who you are. There's a beautiful chant that goes, I am remembering who I am, who I am. We are all the I am. When Moses asked God on Mount Ararat, who are you? He said, I am that I am. And so the I is unique to all of us, but the am we all share. And so what if this amness or this omness, I am, basically says there's only one here and it is existing throughout all creation and we are that? Well, then what would our life look like if we realize that we are the way the universe expresses? We are the way the universe reveals her mystery. We are the way that this one life, universe means one song, this one song sings in seeming multiplicity, but truly in harmony and synchronicity and synergy. where the energy comes together as one. And we are synthesizers. We are putting it together, not as separate. You should see Adam's beautiful tattoos. They're seeming separate expressions of the creative presence. But if you see them as one beautiful whole, they all interrelate. Whether it's a heart or a Buddha or an Einstein or the chakra system, it all interweaves itself on his beautiful body. And he said he's got a lot more space to cover. And so what if we could open to that inclusive nature of the one? And Science of Mind says we embrace all spiritual paths and exclude none. And so in that inclusivity, we get to find that common thread of truth. And the Greek word for truth is that which unhides itself. So the truth will reveal itself when we are ready to experience this deeper awareness. So this Sunday, I invite you to allow the wall that separates you from other to have a crack in it. And in that crack in the wall that we all build to separate and protect ourselves, there is the potential to go within that crack and to discover the truth of being. And hopefully, with the mystery of my talk today and the ringing of the bell, I can obliterate the shell for this brief period of time. And we're all naked in our soul, and we're all swimming in the ocean of truth. And that truth will flood itself into the field of awareness as we are ready to discover something so much vaster than the local mind. And so the invitation and the question that I would invite you to live with, how would life be if we stepped out of our local mind and we entered this non-local field of awareness that is permeating all existence? And we are listening to it, not with our analytic mind, but we are listening to it with our jubilant and beholden soul, a soul that was never born, a soul that will never die. And then everything begins to reveal itself in uniquely magnificent ways. A young friend of mine said this Sunday that he's been listening to Richard Rohr, one of my teachers. And Richard Rohr, this Franciscan monk, likes to talk about the dynamic of the Trinity, not as three aspects of one God, but as the true nature of all existence. There is the Father, the Brahman, the Spirit that contains everything. There is the Atman, which is the soul, which each one of us possesses, but we are part of the universal Atman, the universal soul. And then there is the Holy Spirit, which is the life force moving through all creation that breathes within us, that is the livingness, the beingness, the present participle of our being. And as it says in the Gospel of Thomas, you can kill the Father and you can kill the Son and you will be fine, but if you kill the Holy Spirit, you shall perish.
Well, what does that mean?
I'm not going to give you the answer. I'm going to invite you to feel into it. It's the beingness. My beloved husband asked me, so what is the final question that you're living with? And I said, to be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of trouble and by opposing end them. To die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep, to sleep. Perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For what dreams may come when we shuffle off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the whips and scorns of time, the insolence of office that spurns a patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin? Who would fardels bear to grunt and sweat under the weary strain when something is waiting for them? Ah. And so we'd rather bear those ills we have than fly to others we know not of. And thus conscience doth make cowards of us all. And thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied o'er by the pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pitch and motion, with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. Ah, soft you now, the fair Ophelia. nymph, in thy orisons be all my sins remembered. Huh. Orisons are prayers. And so when we open to the sins, to the mistakes, to the unskilled action, and ask for forgiveness, we are set free to be who we are in spirit and in truth. So without having a clue what that'll look like, I'm going to invite you to open your eyes, to be here now, to be who you are and not who you ain't, because if you is who you ain't, you ain't who you is. And if you ain't who you is who you ain't. Now, who are you? Could we live with that question? Am I the skin-encapsulated ego that has ambitions and drives and goals and acquisitions, who's achieved a status? I'm actually a doctor, Reverend Doctor. It's just a label. It doesn't mean anything. Or maybe I'm just a humble worm crawling through life, trying to discover where do I fit in. And in that question, I don't have an answer. So that's the delicious place to be. And that's what I'm going to explore on this Sunday morning. The theme for this month is right over here on the wall, serving the one. And so how are you going to serve the one? If you realize that the one isn't something separate, it's the one in the many and the many in the one. So it's all the one. So Sylvia has that little green frog climbing up her wall in her bedroom, afraid that it'll jump into the bed with her. How is she going to get out of bed and serve the one? And maybe that little frog is serving her because she's all alone and now she has a companion. When you begin to see it with new eyes, it all begins to change. So how do we serve the one? The first week I explored the idea of finding the gifts by going into the depths of your being. You know, I when I was 21 years old and my life was falling apart, my relationship had ended, I was in New York City, I had a Phi Beta Kappa degree from college and I couldn't get a job anywhere. I couldn't get a job in Manhattan. And someone sent me a little card from California and they knew that I was struggling at that time, and it was a card that had a quote on it. And the quote made no sense to me at age 21, but it said, "In oneself lies the whole world. And if you know how to look and to learn, then the door is there and the key is in your hand, but no one gives you the key or the door to open except yourself." So at 21, I'm reading this. It's by a man named Jay Krishnamurti. Who the heck is Jay Krishnamurti? He's a Hindu, beautiful saint. And so what that little question did was it took me into a discovery place. Who is it? Could I be willing to look within and open the doors and discover what is this thing called David? You know, because I'd been living everybody else's idea of who he should be. You know, you graduate from high school, you graduate from college, and then you'll be a somebody. But I found that there was a somebody, but the nobody was what I was really trying to discover. So could we do the work on ourselves, inquire into who we really are, and discover something that wasn't programmed, that didn't need to appear a certain way, Jody Rutenberg, for it to be accessible and appreciated in the world? Maybe it could be a unique expression that the world didn't appreciate. And then I call these people evolutionary throw forwards. They're the ones that dare to speak truth to power and step out of the box and set themselves free. I just finished binging on a show called Pose, and it's about the trans community in New York City. It's one of my favorite shows I've ever watched. And at the very end, it was during the AIDS crisis in the 80s and the 90s, and I lived through it. It's about a community that's being rejected by the world, and they're still being rejected by the world. You know, these he-she's that nobody knows where they fit in, but they have their own community and they're very supportive. And the head character at the very end, he's my age, he contracts AIDS. He's a black man. He goes home to tell his mother that he's preparing to die. And she says, "You need to go to the church and ask God's forgiveness." And he says, "Ma, I'm not asking God to forgive me for being who I am." He said, "I have a spiritual community that loves and accepts me. I just wanted to let you know that I forgive you and I forgive the church for condemning me for something that I didn't really even have a choice in." And so I'm watching the shadow and the light dance. I'm watching the pain body reaching out for acceptance and forgiveness. And you know, I remember my teacher used to say, "Don't go begging on the world for its approval, because oftentimes it won't give it to you." And I saw in this beautiful final episode that he had to realize he wasn't going to get the acceptance and the love from his Christian family. He had to find it from the community out there. And then when he does make his transition, he had such a big impact on everyone in the trans community. And they're all grieving his death. And his last wish is, when they cremate me, I want my community to be all given a little locket and have a little piece of my ashes. So the last day, they handed a locket to everyone. And his name was, what was his name? Prayer. His name was Prayer. And so he had, Prayer was in the locket, and everybody had one, and they're all reflecting on him. And all of a sudden, you know, the art of drama, his spirit was down there and haunting everyone. He says, "You're not getting rid of me that quick." And so I found myself laughing at the end of it, because it kind of validates that they're still here. They're just not in their body. And he's still going to give his message of empowerment, and that you too can step out of the system and be your authentic self, and that you will be loved, maybe not by your family, but you can find love in, you know, because we all seem to seek it in all the wrong places. And when you stop grasping for it out there, you find that it was there all along. And so that was the beautiful gift of awareness. And, you know, it was the Lord Buddha himself that said, awareness is the Lord of everything. When this awareness begins to awaken within the individual, we stop seeking answers to questions, but we realize that by living in the question, I can remember and discover something so organic, so alive. And, you know, the brain is 10 times more active in the question than it is in the answer. So the question is, who are you going to be in this life, knowing that you have been given this great gift of freedom? Watch Ukraine and don't take freedom for granted. You know, those people are so inspiring to me, how they are motivated by the cause to serve something greater than themselves, to serve an idea called democracy here on planet Earth, something we take for granted sometimes in the Western world. So I'm so inspired by this interconnectedness, this interwovenness. On the second week of this Exploring Serving the One, I asked the question, so what holds us up? What is there? You know, my beloved Terry, my brother, was saying about impermanence. What we are is not impermanent, and yet part of us is impermanent. We have to change in order to evolve. And so in order to change, we have to step out of yesterday's belief system in order to open to something that's more organic and meaningful for us. You know, to let go of, it was Emerson that said, let go of your God of the intellect and your God of tradition, and let your soul be set on fire with a truth that awoke within all of them. Now, that was in 1830 at the Harvard Divinity School address. And I must say, he irritated the whole Harvard institutional system by telling them to let go of the God of the intellect and the God of tradition. Tradition? No, I'm not going to let go of tradition, 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 until you do. And then you don't have to be, I know we're coming up on Easter, and it's very interesting. I came to the center, my very first talk was on Easter Sunday in 1989. And I remember the title of my talk was, "You Have to Have Your Own Resurrection," because you won't understand what the resurrection means until you have one. But the irony is, if you're going to have your own resurrection, first you have to have your own crucifixion. In other words, something has to die in order for something to resurrect. And could we open to that, not as a bad thing, but as a necessary thing? So we're learning a path that's really transformational. Wednesday night, we have our lovely Wednesday Night Live, and I invite any of you who want to be on there. It's a beautiful sharing. And Ashley, I lost your email, so give it to me, because I was going to send you an invite. But after that is over, I went and I sat down. It's 8 o'clock, and I turned on PBS, and they, on Nova, they had a thing about butterflies. Now, when I was the tiniest little boy, I had a butterfly book. And I would say, "Will you draw a butterfly? Gigi Barber, will you draw a butterfly?" And my twin sister, to get back at me, she ripped up my butterfly book. I remember it was the most traumatic day of my life. So at 8 o'clock on Wednesday, they're having the mystery of the butterflies, Terry. I was entranced, the intelligence of a butterfly and how it went from a little egg to a caterpillar, and from the caterpillar, and it went to this morphogenic state and went liquid, and the intelligence within the cells created this incredible, beautiful thing of the butterfly. And I was blown away with the intelligence of the universe. I remember my sweet husband, who's not religious, he watched a Nova episode, and it was about the moths in the rainforest and how a very rare white orchid would bloom in the middle of the night. And this particular moth would find that white orchid, and the proboscis of the moth would go down into the orchid, would pollinate the orchid, and that's how the orchid had its life. They had a relationship, this moth and this very rare orchid. And Trey said, now I know there's got to be a God. If something that exquisitely beautiful who inter are, the one couldn't exist without the other. So when we live in a universe that has this mystery of incredible interconnectedness, Adam knows that. He stands in awe sitting out in nature. Is he tripping on nature? Yeah. He'll look at that and like, oh, look at this. Lift up the rock and lo, I am there, Jesus says. So what if it's all there to, in other words, take us to an altered state of consciousness where we don't get so cynical and so compartmentalized and so elite, thinking that we have the answers, and we could be like a child. When Jesus says you must be like a child if you would enter the kingdom, he was recognizing that the child has that sense of wonder and awe. It can stand and look at a butterfly and say, this gospel of the butterfly is better than reading the book of John. But book of John's fine because it's very mystical. In the book of John, he says, God is love. Now you can get the rest of the book and throw it out. Because when I'm being loving, I'm being godlike. Now, what does that mean? God is love. I mean, just put that into your heart and ask, what does it mean? Now, when are you loving? And you ask that question to your soul. Well, I'm loving when I embrace every moment. This class of Thich Nhat Hanh is changing my life, and that's what they should do. They should all change your life. Because we're impermanent, my brother Terry. The belief system is impermanent. So then what starts to emerge? All belief arises from the ego, so I'm asking you to have no belief. Can we listen? Live without a belief system, Seamus? I would venture to say maybe you can. To let go of the beliefs, because they bind you. All belief arises from the ego. So what doesn't need a belief system? The Gnostic Gospels is the word gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S. That's a knowing. So if I asked Raul, do you believe that you love Gigi, or do you know you love Gigi? And he would say, oh, I know that with my soul. Out of question. So we move out of the conceptual mind, the conclusion part of ourselves, and we begin to excavate this something that holds us. And Thich Nhat Hanh, this beautiful calligraphy up here, I paid $450 for it in 2000. Came back and a woman framed it for $450. So there's a $1,000 thing up here in 2000. I don't know what it's worth now, but it's basically, it's transmitting a message. And the message is to stop and arrive at the present moment, and that's all we ever have, and then to go to that holding place called home, that place that is not impermanent, that is permanent. And could we realize that it's always been there? And then say, I have arrived, I am home, at the peace that passes all understanding, at the love that knows no other. I can actually say to all of you that I love all of you with equanimity. Even the ones that I don't even know. Because that's what love does. Love doesn't have favorites. You know, and when we know ourselves as love and that it's all love, well, then when we experience the simple act of loving Herman, Michael went to, and he had four dogs in Herman. And you can imagine what a beautiful pack of love that must have been. You know, Tia sent a picture on Facebook when she was doing her laundry and she had to go through the hallway of all the dogs. And I saw all the past dogs that are no longer on the planet and my heart opened because they're still in my heart. So could we open to the mystery of that something that's holding us and live in that question and never let it go? So what is holding you today? What is holding you up? What is assisting you in assuming the consciousness that's required to take the next step? And these are trying times. You know, I watch this war over there that's going on, and I ask the question, what is going to be the unfoldment of this? Now, my mind wants to have conclusions and strategies, you know, and, well, if this happens, maybe that will happen. But I'm hoping that a new order of species is awakening on the planet that recognizes that we're all sacred and that we all matter, and to speak the truth to an old system that needs to die and midwife something new that needs to emerge. I think it needs to happen here on planet Earth. It needs to happen in America. It needs to happen at the center. It needs to happen in our own personal relationships. You know, in the Science of Mind, my prayer partner, we were discussing what does it basically teach? And he has his five things that he thinks the Science of Mind teaches and I don't. He says, well, what is it to you, David? And I said, well, since you're asking the question, in Science of Mind, they say the thing that you're looking for, you're looking with. And the second part of that is, and you're looking at. So what if we're looking for this invisible something that's holding us up, this place called home, and we're here to serve that place? Last week, I talked about navigating the troubles of life. And my beloved Tom reminded me that if you call it a trouble and a problem, it's going to be a problem. But if you see it as an an opening or an opportunity, well, then the job search wasn't a problem. It was an opportunity to do good deeds and know and trust the universe will then unfold in a new expression. In 1989, when I came here as the new minister and I was teaching the company line, I realized I had to evolve out of a religious science minister into a universal teacher that recognized that all these spiritual paths come together and express as love, as possibility. And then you find the teachers like Llewellyn von Lee will give you that Sufi piece. And the beautiful Saint Thich Nhat Hanh lives in me now as not necessarily a Buddhist teacher, but the peace lives within me and his consciousness of interconnectedness. We've only had two classes on the liberation of the soul, and the class is called The Art of Living. And the first art that we explored the first week was the art of emptiness. And when you say emptiness, it kind of goes, see, the mind contracts around that. But what he's saying is that there is no separate self. Your Shannon would be empty of Shannon. Well, then what is she made out of? She's made out of light. She's made out of possibility. She's made out of love. Now, the Shannon is the container that's impermanent, and it will go someday. But all that light and that love and that potential is all alive in her, and it's flowering. Well, then we could realize that we inner are. She's not separate from me. I'm the same thing. I'm the same light. I'm the same love. I'm the same. And then we realize that we're all. So when you understand the idea of emptiness, he basically, you understand the idea of oneness. That there's no separate self, there's only one life. Now that's what they call emptiness. And then you're free. Because it's not about you. It's never been about you. It's not about how your feelings are. It's not about if people approve of your looks. It's not about if you succeed. It's not about you. It's about that. It's all been about that. Now, could we defer to that as the little wave and fall into the ocean and let this something that we all share begin to flower and emerge and reveal itself endlessly anew? It's creative. It's spontaneous. It doesn't think twice before it speaks. It starts to express in ways that we can't even imagine. And this week, the key to liberation, he called aimlessness. Now, tell that to an overachiever, to be aimless. To have no goals, to have no ambition, to be just an aimless you-know-what. Not. Aimless means to not be grasping at a goal, to not be grasping for an answer, to not be grasping for conclusions or someone to tell you what it means. Aimlessness means you enter into the present moment and you open to it, whatever it might be. It's just a moment. And to be living in present moment awareness, you don't have bad moments and good moments. They're just moments. And so sometimes the bad moment is a liberating moment. Sometimes we have to step out of something in order to step into something new. So was it a bad moment or was it a transformational moment? When the little caterpillar started making his cocoon, was it a bad moment he was going to lose his life as the voracious little caterpillar? Raoul loves my one joke that I have. He has a repertoire of 100, but I have one. And it's the two caterpillars going down the path of life. And there's a butterfly flying up above them. And the one caterpillar says to the other, "You're not going to get me at one of them things." Now, that's someone who is resisting the transformation. What if we are destined to become liquid to the self that we've identified with and to go through the imaginal realm of metamorphosis, which would be resurrection? And out of the cocoon or out of the tomb, you roll away the stone and comes the presence of the enlightened one. Now, when Jesus resurrected, the story, he didn't resurrect in form. It's not like the dead stood up and walked around. He resurrected just like Thich Nhat Hanh is doing, in spirit. And when he said, "Lo, I will be with you always," I mean, so many of you, Susan is experiencing the same thing. She woke up at 4 in the morning. And the psychic said that's when the spirits are most alive, at 3 and 4 in the morning. And now she's been waking up and listening to him. And we have this same kind of resonance with this spirit. And he right at the end of his life, he says, "You've got to know that I'm still going to be here. I'm not going to go in anywhere." So navigating trouble is what we're doing in life. And when you navigate it from the still place, I shared with you last week that Thich Nhat Hanh spoke about the boat people that were fleeing Vietnam. And he says they would get on these boats and they would be fleeing to another place where they would be safe, just like the Ukrainians are fleeing for their safety. And he said, when there was somebody calm on the boat, they could move from one destination to the other. But when there was hysteria on the boat, oftentimes they overturned and people drowned. So what if when we navigate these troubling times, we could find someone like Mary, who's like a strong, clear energy, who's not going to freak out. And then we can together navigate this ship through turbulent waters to a port where we can restore ourselves. We're seeing it happen in Ukraine and Poland, and it's truly inspiring. I said to my husband, I said, why don't we take one of the orphans into our house? And he says, we're too old, David. And I said, well, we'll see. But wouldn't it be nice to open to that, to the mystery of connectedness? So today we're living in the question. And I pulled out my little book, Wellsprings, which is a series of spiritual exercises, one after the other, where he invites us to ask, how do we meet life? And at the very end of this book, he does seeds of inspiration. Now, every Sunday, all I do is I'm a gardener. I plant seeds. And even Jesus, in the parable of the sower, they said, if you really want to know what Jesus taught, just read the parables, because he spoke in metaphor. And he would say, a man went out and he was sowing seeds. Now, the seeds are the inspirational thoughts. And he said, some seeds fell along the roadside and burned up in the sun. Some seeds went into the soil, but they didn't have enough space, so they didn't go very far. But a few seeds, very few, went in, put down their roots, began to grow and bear fruit and reveal. So when you hear a seed, a pearl of great price, can that begin to grow in the field of your awareness, in the garden of your soul? You're gardening this new consciousness. And what we need is we need seeds that empower us. So the question I would be, when we're given all this overload of information, could we take those seeds into our soul and let them begin to grow within us? You know, if you plant a negative, Tom reminded me of this, if you plant a negative limited idea, you're going to be growing that in your consciousness. But what if you planted that little seed of, I know I can, I know I can, that life is here for me. It's not here against me. You've heard me talk about the four levels of consciousness in New Thought. The lowest level is the to-me consciousness. It's the victim consciousness. You know, our political parties always need an enemy. They play victimhood. They blame on somebody else for somebody else. That's the lowest level of consciousness. The second level of consciousness is the for me consciousness, where you realize that everything has happened in your life is there for you to assist you in assuming a consciousness that's wanting to give birth to you. And then I live in for everything is for me. Everything is grace. Then the third, which is more challenging, and you witness that's operating through David, is the through me consciousness, where there's something greater and it moves through us. Jesus said, I have myself do nothing. It's this presence within that does the work. And so it's not David's love, it's this divine love using the instrument of David to express and reveal. Any creative artist knows that when they're out of the way, this something can flow. Could we be in that flow of that something? And then the last and the most difficult and very rarely embodied is the as me consciousness. Jesus say, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Thich Nhat Hanh would say, you know, you are all the Buddha in expression. The Buddha isn't a man that died 3,000 years ago. It's a living expression, the same thing as the Christ. Well, that's the as-me. Could we enter into that presence? So I'm going to give you a few little seeds from Anthony DeMiller. He has like 20 pages of seeds. These are just ideas. Now, enter the life of the question, knowing that this is, if I say that you are God in expression, to Shannon, and she takes that in, how does that feel? Does she go, huh? Or does she go, ah? And I'm just going to give you a few seeds, and then I'm going to close with a meditation from Jeff Foster, where he sees a whole new world. And when you can see it, you can achieve it. So could we see this war as not, Ernest Holmes says, show me an individual who is for something and against nothing, and I'll show you someone who will change the world. So I'm going to give you a little spiritual exercise as we move in, and Raul can move to the bell. And so I invite you to go within. And he says, do not force your mind to open. He says, that would only kill the seed that I'm going to plant. Let these seeds fall into the soil of your being, and let an inner truth within you germinate and grow. And discover what it is. And where the soil is rich within you, the soil of receptivity, and will sow it in your heart, then give the seed time to grow. So I'm just going to give you a few of these. He says, silence is the absence of my ego. That's the seed. God loves life in its failures as much as in its fruitfulness. Let that seed. Eternal life is here. Eternal life is now. Wonder is the heart of contemplation. This truth I firmly hold, all evidence to the contrary notwithstanding, my life has been a gift. My life has been a blessing to the world. One moment of acceptance of everything that is better than 1,000 years of piety. You are made whole again in the silence. Nature, so fragile and insecure, exposed to death, is also fully alive. You only live, and this is for the Ukrainians, when you find a treasure that you would gladly give up your life for. Reality is your home, with a big R. Find it, and you will never again be lonely. I am rich enough, and now I hear the sound of music in the song of the birds and in the human voices that surround me. And lastly, you do not have to change for God to love you. And so as those seeds begin to grow within the soil of your consciousness, you rest. And then the question is, how then shall I live? Knowing that the silence takes me into a place of gnosis. How then shall I live, knowing that this universe doesn't require that I change to be acceptable, that I'm perfect just as I am? How then shall you live when you notice when the soul has something to give itself to, you're willing to even die for something you so deeply believe in, like the Ukrainians are exampling to us on planet Earth? And so I'm going to ask you, in this fertile soil of your soul, and that's what the soul really is a repository for divine ideas. Emerson says, hitch your wagon to a star. And what that metaphor says to me is that there are illumined ideas that we get to hitch our consciousness to that will transform the world when we are able to assimilate them. And so as these illumined ideas begin to expand within you, offer your consciousness to the collective consciousness so that together we might create heaven on earth. I'm going to read to you the vision of Jeff Foster for a world that works for everyone. And I invite you to hold this vision. He says, don't focus on what's wrong with the world in this moment. When you fight against a broken world, when you live in resistance, there is an inner violence, and you contribute to the outer violence that you see. So I'm asking you to see a new world and call it forth. See the world as it is, the way an artist would look at a face, or a tattoo artist would look at Adam. With all of its flaws, this world, with its imperfections, its ridges, its humps, its bumps, its crevices, and its creases. And yet see the light and the dark, the love and the flight from the love, the kindness and the forgetting of that kindness. See it all with fascination. Love the world now, just as it appears, and hold the world in your loving arms. She is our mother. And sometimes there are mistakes and there's learning that needs to happen. And from this place of divine love, now re-enter the world and invite yourself to be strong like a rock. Thich Nhat Hanh would say, find the strength of the mountain. illuminate the world with your powerful presence, and speak up for those without a voice. Amplify messages of understanding and compassion, and spread the truth that arises from within you. Fight for what you know and love, not against what you impose or oppose or reject. Fight for what you know and what you love, and not against what you oppose and reject. And then your attention is your greatest blessing. So we bless the world, knowing that we are birthing now a new world with our own loving attention. Do not energize the dying world that needs to be hospiced, a world that is intolerant, that needs to leave us, but rather gather with your brothers and sisters and discover your spiritual family beyond color and race, religion and belief, and unite in the name of love. Because now you are not attacking a world, but you're fighting alongside her, and all her angels are assisting you to assume the consciousness that is required. Our better angels are here, and we are in this together. So I invite you to take a sacred breath. And as the Incas say, breathe in the Sami, which is the rarefied energy of spirit, and then exhale the Hucha, which is the heavy energy that needs to be released at this time. Another sacred breath of breathing in the Sami, the rarefied energy of possibility and light, exhaling the Hucha, the heavy energy. And know that by doing this, you're creating sacred space within yourself. And this is the opening, this is the doorway, this is the teacher that is assisting us, helping us discover how we can serve by seeing a world that works for everyone, and by knowing that if two or more are gathered in my name, as Jesus would say, in my nature, seeing a world where compassion and forgiveness reign supreme, a world where all of life is sacred, and it begins with our perception. We are always working with perception. So we begin to see things rightly. And when we see them rightly, we set things rightly. And so we smile to the inevitable consequence of a consciousness that can discover what Thomas Merton calls the hidden wholeness within all creation. It starts within our own physical body. We breathe into that hidden wholeness within our physical form. And we smile. And now we breathe into the hidden wholeness of our mental body. A mental body that is not burdened by tormenting thoughts, but is filled with an awake awareness, the Buddha consciousness, the Christ consciousness. And now we breathe into the emotional body, and we find the wholeness within our emotional body, not turbulent waves of anxiety and worry and fear, but rather an emotional body that is harmonious and loving and available and compassionate, all because we stopped. I'm going to invite Raul to ring the bell. This is the mindfulness bell. And knowing that that bell tells us to stop, to be here now, to be love now. And we smile to the bell. The bell is always ringing somewhere. And just by stopping and going within, we can say, I have arrived, I am home. To be still and know that I am God, that all there is God. Not a man in the sky, but a living presence that awakens when we live the question of who am I? How can I serve? How can I offer myself as an instrument of the divine? And embrace whatever arises in my experience to allow whatever arises to inquire into it. What is the blessing here? And then to wrap my soul around it and nurture it. I invite you to now give yourself a hug, to put your arms around your own heart, to know that you are the blessing of life itself, not as a separate self, but as part of the collective energy of the oneness. And to this heart of the universe, let's join in the heart salutation by saying, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the emerging presence of the One, always smiling, revealing an inner presence that sees itself everywhere reflected as the one life playfully dancing, emptiness dancing, ever revealing grace and possibility for all to enjoy. Trusting in the unfoldment of this miraculous being, we open our heart, we offer it to the world, we celebrate this now moment, we say yes, 1,000 times yes, this life belongs to you, use it as you will, and so it is. Thank you for showing up, sending in your tithes. There's a basket in the back of the room. And it's so nice to see new timers showing up a second time. Third time is a charm. Love you, Michael.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.